Hello and welcome back to Spinalcast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today is Ryan Bauslog. Ryan is a physical therapist at the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs in Minnesota and specializes in neurological physical therapy. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So on today's episode of Spinalcast, I think for our viewers at home, our real goal is to kind of just learn a little bit more about your specialized field of physical therapy, and then also, you know, talk about your experience working with the VA and how that's been. And if that sounds all right to you, I just, you know, I got a list of questions that I'd like to run through.
Sounds great. Let's get started.
All right. Perfect. So in that case, how did you get into the neurologic physical therapy? Like what outside of other, you know, forms of PT, why was it that the neuro kind of caught your eye or attention?
Yeah. So, you know, I had a clinical rotation at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system when I was a student, and had a great experience there, and ultimately got hired right out of school.
Fantastic.
And I started in, and so the VA is all I know.
Okay.
And I started in just kind of general outpatient orthopedics, and bounced around in a number of different practice settings, at the VA, but ultimately found my way down to the Spinal Cord Injury and Disorder Center.
Okay.
And I think the really unique aspects of our Spinal Cord Injury and Disorder Center is just, you know, the equipment that's available, the assistive technology that's utilized, and the time we get to spend caring for those veterans is much greater than perhaps other areas of the hospital.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. Are there a large number of veterans that kind of need this neurological care?
Yeah, so the VA has a national registry for the various spinal cord injury and disorder centers. And we have about 1,400 veterans on our registry. And so we're, Minneapolis is a spinal cord injury and disorder center, and there's 25 of those centers across the nation.
Got it.
And so if you think about it in terms of number of veterans on the registry, we're about the sixth largest.
Okay. And so as far as like the Minneapolis center, is that primarily for Minneapolis residents, or can anyone from across the country come and, you know, get help at the Minneapolis center? Kind of how does that work?
Yeah. So we operate using a hub and spoke model of care.
Okay.
And so the Minneapolis SCID center is a hub site.
Got it.
And we support VA facilities that are spinal cord injury spoke sites that are located in the surrounding five states. And so we have SCI spoke sites in North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and then Minnesota as well. And
right.
So, you know, it's a pretty big region.
It covers pretty much all the bases that I could think of at least in the Midwest region. And, you know, kind of talking about how you guys are branched out around the U.S., it sounds like you have pretty clear coverage for anybody who's in need.
Mm-hmm.
So do those satellite, I guess maybe satellite's not the correct term, but those, you know, off-center facilities, do they have all the same equipment as, say, the hub?
Yeah, so it's a little bit different. The SCI centers or hub sites really provide a large interdisciplinary kind of continuum of services.
Okay.
And so we have CARF accredited inpatient and outpatient rehab programs. We have some other specialty programs, so we're considered an ALS Center of Excellence.
Okay.
We have a MS Regional Specialty Program. We have home care programming, and we also have virtual care as well. And so we have a wide array of services available.
Right.
Whereas the spoke sites, they play a really kind of critical role in our system of care, in that they have kind of close relationships and connections to those veterans who maybe live much further from the different centers. And so they primarily focus on SCI primary care and then have some limited specialty care as well.
Got it. So occasionally I would assume then a patient might, you know, experience some assistance at these, you know, other centers, and then occasionally visit the hub for specific services or needs, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. And so one of the really unique services that we provide is a annual kind of preventative health evaluation.
Okay.
And so it's multidisciplinary. Basically, it's a whole day of appointments with all the disciplines that are available within the SCI Center. And so you get, you know, provider evaluation, PT, OT, speech, social work, dietitian, psychologist. Everyone can kind of have a point of contact with the veteran. And the focus is more on preventative care, on health promotion and education. Yeah. And then it also allows for kind of a year-to-year comparison for, you know, a variety of tests and measures. And so it's really nice because it helps us to identify, you know, smaller issues before they become big problems.
Well, absolutely. And from our experience interviewing people in this community, you know, those small issues, if they're not noticed, do become very dangerous for mm-hmm. them. So I think that's huge. It also sounds like an incredible benefit to someone who's struggling with their injury to have all of these things kind of in one place, as it were, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
And just being able to, you know, get all of those things done, because I think it's daunting for anybody, myself included. You know, when I get told I need to schedule these four appointments for these reasons, it's like, that's a lot. That's a lot to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, having kind of a spot that's helping in that sense, I think is huge. So
I think just to add, you know, one little thing to that, sometimes veterans are resistant to certain services. So, you know, psychology, for example, or mental health care.
Fair enough.
Where if it was offered as an individual discipline, they would maybe decline. But yet if it's part of like a structured, you know, service like the annual evaluation, then sometimes, you know, it's a way that we can kind of get some contact with some disciplines that, you know, they may
normally say no to.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a big thing because, mental health, as we all know, has been more and more of a, you know, a topic that people are bringing to the forefront. And I myself have had my own mental health struggles and found it incredibly helpful to talk to somebody else. And so I'm sure your guys' experiences, if we can get them in the door, they probably leave feeling better and go, oh, okay, maybe I was wrong about that. I should probably, you know, keep seeing somebody about that.
Yeah,
and so that's huge. So kind of keying back on the veterans themselves, you know, what kind of injuries are typical for a veteran? Is it normally, you know, due to combat injury, or, you know, something more along the lines of like, I served way back when, now I've in my older age, I had an accident, and, you know, how does it normally play out?
Yeah, so in the Spinal Cord Injury and Disorder Center, we primarily serve veterans with spinal cord injuries, and they could be traumatic or non-traumatic.
Okay.
And then also multiple sclerosis, and then amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And so the acronym there is ALS, or sometimes referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yep.
So those are kind of the big three, and then there's some less common diagnoses that we also serve. So an example for that would be Guillain-Barré syndrome or hereditary spastic paraplegia.
Yeah, I guess I've never heard of either of those. So.
Yeah, a little less common, but still eligible for services through our center. And then, you know, we serve veterans with a wide range of etiologies and across the lifespan. And so we have veterans who did, of course, sustain a spinal cord injury that occurred while in combat or when serving in the military. But then we have, you know, plenty of veterans who either were diagnosed with MS or had a spinal cord injury outside of their time of service.
Right.
And, you know, equal access to care for our facility.
Well, that's huge. I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, when I think of the VA, I always think about, like, it's so wonderful that these veterans, like, They gave the ultimate sacrifice to, you know, fight for our country, but the ability for them to then kind of at least have some real residual value when they do come home, that they can, you know, continue to draw from no matter what their life experiences turn out to be. I think that's super, super major. So as I was poking around your website, and we already kind of touched on this SCI system of care, kind of the satellite offices around the hubs, kind of hub and spoke model is what you said, right? Okay, perfect. I'm catching on. So along with that, I also kind of came across this recovery program that you talked about. And so I was wondering if you could just kind of clue me in a little bit more on details around this specifically recovery program?
Yeah, so, you know, research and development is definitely an area of focus for our Spinal Cord Injury and Disorder Center. We have a number of individuals who are involved in research, whether it be providers, nurses, therapists, and then we have a rather large team of engineers who kind of make up this RECOVER program. And I'm not going to try to tell you what the acronym stands for because it's pretty lengthy. The VA loves their acronyms, but really they look towards the application of kind of novel equipment and technology. And so they really put an emphasis on veteran feedback. There's a patient advisory panel that has the opportunity to provide feedback about upcoming studies or projects that they're interested in.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool equipment that has come out of that and actually made it all the way to like the commercial market. And some examples would be an over the bed upper body ergometer. And so sometimes
what's an ergometer?
So it's like an arm bike.
Okay. I've seen those.
Yeah. There's times that veterans have to be on prolonged bed rest. And so that gives them the ability to, you know, maintain their cardiovascular function to some extent while in bed.
Yeah.
So that was created through that program. Also a wireless camera that was created and adapted so that an individual could do independent skin inspection. You know, pressure injuries and wounds are a big complication associated with people who have absent or impaired sensation.
Yeah, and they're typically in a spot that is not really easy to access see yourself. So
images could be taken or videos recorded and sent directly to, you know, the veterans healthcare provider.
Very cool. And so I, you know, in previous episodes, we've talked to, you know, a handful of different researchers who are studying, you know, kind of different therapies, almost like assistive devices that are being either surgically implanted or attached to someone that give them kind of immediate relief or assistance. And it kind of seems to me like the whole SCI kind of community as a whole, there is this big push to get some functionality back or give them some more, I guess, individuality, some way that they can do things for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's huge for the people who are injured. Are there any specific, you know, technologies that you're using beyond these that are, you know, helping these patients kind of be more what's the word?
Independent.
Independent.
Yeah, there we go. It's a big,
my guy Ryan coming in with the words.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm most grateful to work at the VA is because of our access to equipment and assistive technology. And that's both kind of in the clinic and the equipment that we can use while treating and working with veterans, but also the clinician's ability to order and prescribe equipment for veterans to use at home and in the community.
Right.
At the Minneapolis SCI Center, we have a pretty nice therapy space. We have a whole variety of low-tech and high-tech equipment.
Cool.
Some of the higher-tech, you know, flashier equipment might include, you know, we have some robotic exoskeletons. We have functional electrical stimulation devices. We have a variety of body weight-supported gait training devices. We're lucky enough to have a HydroWorks pool. And so it has kind of the treadmill that is underwater. The floor elevates so you can change the depth. There's some cameras, jets, all the bells and whistles. But really, all the devices that we have access to, and we feel very blessed to have access to these devices and equipment, just helps to amplify the interventions that are provided by our therapists.
Got it. Now, this kind of is a little bit of a caveat question or kind of offline a little bit, but I imagine people who are somewhat recently injured are still a little hesitant to like do much or, you know, very intimidated by the act of doing physical therapy. And I'm sure it's also very difficult and hard and at times maybe even painful. Do you have many patients that are not very receptive to the treatment or not as willing as others? Or do you struggle with that at all?
You know, I think that's kind of the bread and butter of the therapist's kind of toolkit is they always have option A, but then they have option B, C, D, E. You know, you go down the alphabet.
Right.
And so usually there's something that you can get that will engage the veteran and try and get them to participate more. I think always anytime we can identify tasks that are salient or meaningful to that individual, they're going to be more likely to engage. But
yeah. Okay. So kind of keying back to something you said a little bit earlier, you kind of referred to the fact that there's numerous departments that are doing some studies and research activity constantly. And I was wondering if you could just kind of, you know, give us a little more insight on what types of research they're doing currently.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, a lot of the research focus within the SCI Center is towards the application of novel equipment and technology.
Mm-hmm.
One of the studies that just launched is looking at the application of a mobile standing manual wheelchair. And so there's not a standing manual wheelchair that's mobile that's available on the market today. And
right.
So it's kind of a novel intervention that our engineers came up with.
Very
cool. And they just started a study looking at kind of the application of that for our SCI veterans.
Very cool. So if I was, you know, listening to this podcast or watching this podcast and I had recently been injured, I assume I would need to be a veteran in order to access these services. And let's say I am a veteran and I'm looking to access these services. Like, what's kind of the pathway to me, you know, getting access to you or the individuals at the VA?
Yeah. So the kind of the first step is to establish primary care.
Okay.
Once that's established, then the primary care provider can put in a outpatient spinal cord injury and disorder consult.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we'll evaluate for eligibility for our services. And then after that, you're eligible to receive services for life, basically.
Awesome. Actually, that kind of leads me to another obscure question, but how long are you typically with one of your patients? So, like, have you been seeing some of your patients for years and years and years? Or do patients kind of bounce around to different specialists, as it were?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's all different examples for that question. But I think that makes me think about the medical mission for the VA is just a little bit different. And so we're not bound by some of the limitations that are present in some private sector facilities. And
okay.
So we can have much longer relationships, you know, with our patients and
right.
can have multiple episodes of care throughout a year, especially, you know, if the patient's benefiting from the services that are being provided, we're going to continue providing those services.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to be able to, you know, see a patient, establish a plan of care, determine whatever frequency and duration that you feel is most appropriate
right.
and just put that in motion.
That's awesome. Well, and I suppose, you know, there's these limitations that are put on, you know, people who aren't veterans, who are, you know, whether it be financial, insurance, all those things, there's just a lot that goes into it. And it gets expensive really fast. Actually, an interview we recently did, they kind of talked about what it costs to have a
yeah.
spinal cord injury. It's petrifying,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to imagine, you know, in a split second, you went from being in a very comfortable place to being the poorest you've ever been. And it's just, it's daunting. So I think that's huge. So kind of, you know, talking about all of these awesome therapies and research that's being done, exoskeletons, you know, like I'm imagining like a mech suit, which is pretty cool. Are there any other kind of treatments that you've seen outside of the VA that you wish you guys were implementing right now, or anything that you have, you know, seen on the internet that you have brought to the team and said, like, maybe we should look at this?
You know, nothing that specifically comes to mind.
Right.
I think, you know,
they probably spend their entire day doing it, so that
yeah.
would make sense.
Yeah, but I think the point you make is valid in that the technology and how it's advanced over the past, you know, 10 years
mm-hmm.
has been pretty unbelievable. And so just thinking about what is you know, the provision of PT for the SCI patient population going to look like 30 years from now?
Yeah,
it could be completely different. And so you know, one example of how we really lean heavily on assistive technology, mm-hmm. And how it's integrated within our care is highlighted through our ALS clinic. And so, you know, with ALS, the typical lifespan after diagnosis is 2 to 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And I so, did not know that. Yeah, it's devastating. It's yeah. a devastating diagnosis. And, typically includes or involves a pretty rapid kind of loss of function.
Decline, yeah.
And so with that, then we see, you know, a significant need for assistive technology in order to maintain any type of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a couple of devices that we'll lean on in those situations. One is a robotic feeding device.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, our occupational therapy team will set the patient up with a robotic feeder, and all they need to have is, you know, just a little bit of finger movement, and they could operate a switch and it could, you know, trigger this robotic feeding device to scoop up some food and bring it to their mouth so that they
Incredible.
Can eat. And so, you know, the idea of having a piece of equipment like that, that allows them to eat independently is really profound.
It's huge. And I'm sure for them, they're like, it's been, you know, however many years since I ate on my own
yeah.
or whatever. And so that's a massive kind of improvement for them.
Yeah. To be able to just sit and, you know, eat with
right.
your loved one, as opposed to having them, you know, take turns feeding themselves and you.
Exactly.
Is probably.
I want to eat my bowl of cereal without having to wake up
yeah.
my wife.
Yeah, right.
Right. Like, I totally get that. So that's kind of an interesting challenge that you highlight there is, you know, just being able to do a minor function like feeding yourself. What are other kind of more common challenges that you see across the board with people who have suffered SCI injuries or disabilities that you're, you know, very commonly addressing in your therapies?
You know, I think accessibility is a huge challenge even now for individuals who are in wheelchairs. And
are you talking primarily like technology, like accessibility within technology, or just everywhere?
Well, I feel like that's actually improving way quicker than like
I would agree
structural,
with that. Yeah.
You know, accessibility.
Oh, I see what you're, yeah.
You're just thinking about the ramp outside of the office space here,
Absolutely.
Right?
Right?
Obviously, it's not ADA accessible, but I think that's where the therapy team really comes into play, is kind of looking right away at the veteran's home environment and what are the modifications that may be needed to be able to get them back home.
Got it.
And what are the, you know, community activities that they enjoy, and what are the barriers there, and how do we overcome those so they can participate in the things they enjoy?
Got it. No, I think that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, the accessibility as far as the computers and everything, it's been incredible to me. Our, you know, executive director, Peter Morton, he's a pretty severe quadriplegic. So he has very limited mobility, even just from the neck up. And his ability to read and draft an email. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just he's as responsive as anybody else on a computer.
Of course, yeah.
And it's been incredible to watch. So I just have a couple more here. I guess, you know, we've talked a lot about the therapies and things that you're doing with these veterans. And I assume, given that you've been there for a little while, you're clearly having some, you know, positive feedback from it. But are you seeing good results with the patients that you're working with? Are you proud of, you know, the work that you're doing? And I should, of course, you're proud of the work you're doing. But, you know, are you seeing improvements? Is it giving you that? I don't know, for lack of a better, like the zhuzh that makes you excited to go to work every day?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple examples that jump to mind. One is that, you know, we'll often have patients who come into our inpatient unit and their goal is to return to walking.
Yeah.
And so our therapists will work as hard as possible to try and help them accomplish that goal.
Right.
And, you know, it's not uncommon to see a veteran regain the ability to walk, and then they'll walk out of the center when they're discharging, and we'll
awesome.
Kind of line the halls and everyone will cheer them on. Usually there's some like Rocky music playing in the background.
Heck yeah.
But there's a lot of stories like that are really meaningful. And maybe it's not as big as walking. Maybe it's that they're able to drive their power wheelchair out independently.
Right.
And so that little bit of function made all the difference.
Totally.
But we, you know, we have a bunch of surveys and outcomes that we track. And I think across the SCI system of care, they're all, you know, looking really good. And one of the survey questions that's asked is if you could receive free healthcare outside of the VA, would you? And almost rarely do we ever get anyone say yes to that question. So I think that that means a lot to us. That's a really important question.
It says a lot about the care that you're giving and how, you know, how you're treating everybody and what is offered there. So that's fantastic. So let's say someone's watching or listening and they are very interested in physical therapy and primarily they're finding this really, you know, entertaining and find what you do really cool. What kind of piece of advice would you give them to, you know, head down a similar career? What are your kind of best tricks of the trade, I guess?
Yeah, you know, I think my recommendation would be to reach out to a local clinic and to try and get in and do some observation or volunteering.
Okay.
I think, you know, healthcare may be unique in that those opportunities are really aplenty. And so they're actually required for a lot of the applications, you know, a certain number of observation hours. And so you really kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
So really try and find as many different practice settings and get some observation that way.
Awesome. Well, I want to open the floor if there was anything else you wanted to touch on. I don't know if there's any, you know, special events that are going on with the VA or anything. If you wanted to mention anything, now's your opportunity. Otherwise, I think that covers all the questions I had. So,
yeah, I think the only thing that I would mention just briefly is a plug for our rec therapy programming and adaptive sports.
Oh, okay.
And so we have a really robust kind of local programs that are offered, and we have great community partnerships.
Awesome.
And so, you know, you name it, our veterans are probably participating in it at some level. And so,
right.
You know, we have adaptive scuba diving that occurs.
Wow.
Adaptive kayaking, cycling, bocce ball, bowling, archery, you know, so many different programs. If there's an interest that a veteran express, our rec therapist will help them, you know, get engaged in that activity. And the cool part about that kind of local engagement
yeah.
is that it serves as a catalyst to participation in some of the really big national VA programs. And so there's a number of different national programs. A couple include the National Veterans Wheelchair Games,
okay.
The National Disabled Veterans Golf Clinic, the Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic. And so these are really impressive programs, and we often get patients who will, you know, fly across the country to participate in these events. And
awesome.
Really, I think I get a lot out of it.
Cool. Well, awesome. If there's nothing else, I think we're going to wrap up here.
I think that's it.
Perfect. Well, I just want to make a shout out to everyone who's watching or listening at home. If you're watching on YouTube, you know, maybe give us a subscription. Hit the bell icon so you know when new episodes drop. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, you could always give us a follow. But other than that, on behalf of MCPF and Spinalcast, Ryan, I just really want to appreciate you know, everything that you do for the nation's veterans, but also the whole SCI community. And it's been awesome to talk to you today. So
yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely. Thanks.